Father Weisenborn was a priest from the East Coast who was caught on multiple occasions sexually abusing young boys by police. They would come to his order back east and say, hey, you know, you need to do something about this. But Father Weisenborn's order, when they reached out to the servants as to whether or not they would accept Father Weisenborn, the servants said, yeah, we will. We would like a $10,000 donation to come along with him, but we'll take him. And so they did. But within a few years, Father Weisenborn was assigned to New Mexico parishes, including St. Francis Xavier Parish on South Broadway here in Albuquerque. And he abused a number of children there.
Priests that were accused of sexual misconduct in any part of the U.S. could be sent to Jemez Springs for a few months or longer. Would they have had any contact with children during that time period?
Well, the servants lost a lot of files over the years. So we don't know exactly what the day-to-day life of a paraclete priest looked like. We do know priests who were sent to the servants of the paraclete were not kept under lock and key. They did have freedom to travel. Certainly, there were times where priests who were sent to the servants of the paraclete in Jemez Springs were in contact with children during their treatment duration.
Currently, the Archdiocese acknowledges these 78 priests. You're saying that you think the Archdiocese should acknowledge any and all priests accused of sexually abusing kids anywhere who then spent time within the boundaries of the Archdiocese of Santa Fe. Is that right?
That's correct.
Why? Explain a little more.
The logic of putting together a list of credibly accused priests is that if you knew where these guys were and you knew when they were in particular places, you might be able to reach out to potential victims. The priests that were at the servants of the paraclete, I don't know if the Archdiocese knows or not which of those priests were working in New Mexico. If they know and they aren't telling, that's a problem. And if they don't know, then that's also a problem, right? Because what we're trying to do is risk assessment and sort of pick up the pieces in all of this and try to help people who may have been harmed. The first task there, if you're doing that kind of triage, is assessing the scope of the damage accurately.
Last month, a Pennsylvania grand jury report that drew national attention included several priests accused of horrible sexual abuse who were then sent to New Mexico for treatment. There's at least 10 by my count. New Mexico Attorney General Hector Balderas has recently said he's been in communication with the Pennsylvania Attorney General. If the New Mexico Attorney General does launch a similar investigation, what do you make of that, that this is happening now and not a year ago when the Archdiocese published their list?
Sometimes you have to lead by example. I think that's what the Attorney General and the Pennsylvania grand jury did. I can't fault, you know, Mr. Balderas for not being the first one to think of doing this. And, I know he has a lot on his plate. But now, at this moment, when the iron's hot, I think it's really, really crucial that Mr. Balderas impanel a grand jury and let them investigate the history of this issue in New Mexico. I think we're still seeing the public health fallout of widespread childhood sexual abuse through the decades, whether that's drugs, whether that's domestic violence, whether that's just depression or suicide. It plays out over time. You know, we're calling on Mr. Balderas to impanel a grand jury, to back that grand jury with investigative power and let them dig into this issue. I think it's crucial.
As an attorney who's represented many victims or survivors of priest abuse, what kind of response would you most like to see from the Archdiocese next?
I think the Archdiocese should become an open book to the people of New Mexico and saying, here we are. Here are our records. Here are our personnel files. We've redacted the names of victims, right, because we think that's private. But here is all of our correspondence. Here's what we knew. And here's what we didn't know. People don't believe the church's apologies are genuine right now because they still sense that so much is being withheld. So I think that the way you overcome that and start to rebuild trust is by having that kind of radical transparency.
Levi Monagle, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.